Hello, and welcome to our series, Career Resilience, where we talk with people about their career path and their career journey, and maybe we can all learn from each other. My name is Jan Daniluk, and I'm a human resources professional in London, Ontario, Canada. I work with Ford Keast LLP, and I work with my clients to help them with the HR side of their business. We hope that you will enjoy these discussions with real people about real challenges and real working life situations. Welcome. Dan, welcome to our series, Career Resilience. We're delighted to have you here today and have a chance to talk about your career and your resilience. For everybody listening, my guest today is Dan Catunto, and we're going to talk about his role and his career resilience. Welcome, Dan.
Thank you for having me. Very excited to be here today with you.
To get us started, tell us about your current role.
So right now I'm an employee with the City of London. So I am the manager of the homeless team within the Social Services Department of the City. I also manage the LEAP program. So this is our Learning, Earning, and Parenting program. So supports for individuals, young families, young mothers and fathers who are on social assistance.
And what led you to this type of work?
Well, that's interesting because my degree is in political science and I thought one day I was going to be a civics teacher, and now I'm here with the city working with vulnerable populations. I think for me, one of the keys to my career path was an opportunity I had. I worked for the regional HIV AIDS Connection. It was a one-year contract right out of Western, and it was very impactful to me. It was working with individuals who were street involved, who were homeless, who were suffering with addictions, and that opportunity to work with them, to support them, to help them move along in reaching their goals, whatever that goal may be, it had an impact on me, and it really changed the trajectory of my career. So from that point on, it was really focused on social services. So my entire career has either been in municipal government or social services, and that I reflect and think that was the starting point of my career decision.
You mentioned a phrase there, street involved.
We use terms like street involved or living rough. These are individuals that are unsheltered. So these are individuals that are not housed. They're not precariously housed. Couch surfing is often the term we use. These are individuals that are actually on our streets in London. These are individuals that are living by the riverbank. These are individuals that really have no access to supports other than on the street. So we say street involved as this is their community, this is their home, is living on our streets, unfortunately. Working alongside those individuals years ago had an impact on me, and I wanted to continue to work and support. So that's where my career ended.
Yeah, so you wanted to, and you are doing meaningful work.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much. I'm very blessed to work alongside the individuals I do here on my team. We serve some of the most vulnerable members of our community. And it's challenging work for sure, but it's also very meaningful work. So yeah, I'm very fortunate to have that experience every day.
Let's talk a little bit more about your career, and we'll come back to these other topics, which are so fascinating. In terms of where you are in the structure, are you a city employee?
I am a city employee. I'm on the management side. So my team, I'm a frontline manager, so I operate from City Plaza. So 9 caseworkers that are on my team, we serve approximately 700 members of our community. The vast majority of those individuals are no fixed address, so these are homeless individuals. In terms of our office structure here, we are the largest social services office in the city. We do have locations throughout the city. And there are supports and resources for our homeless clients in any of our social services offices, but the hub is primarily City Plaza. Majority of the clients that we serve, again, are street involved or living in one of the shelters, and the shelters are located near downtown. So we are the hub. We're a busy office.
Tell me about the application process. If somebody applies, what has driven them to apply? Let's start there.
A whole host of different reasons. Ontario Works, we provide supports and services to a vast and a wide range of members of our community. So we have individuals that have university PhD level education straight through to newly arrived Canadians that they are experiencing Canada for the first time, and they're needing supports to integrate into their new community. So it can be a very wide range. The vast majority, and I'll speak specifically to the teams that report to me, are individuals that have either lost their housing, have had a challenging time securing housing. These are individuals that are dealing with the compounding issues of mental health and addiction as well. So what we want to do is eliminate the barriers of housing, addictions, mental health, so that our support, our counterparts and general case management teams can work with that individual in whatever their employment goal may be. So we're working with a population that's a little bit further away from their employment goals. Ontario Works, at the end of the day, is an employment agency. But my focus and our focus as a team is the elimination of some of the life barriers that would limit someone's employment opportunities.
I have heard that all of us are four steps away from living on the street based on decisions that we make. Can you speak to that? That's a very scary concept. What are your thoughts on that?
I have certainly a few thoughts. I think there is a perception, perhaps, not a positive perception, unfortunately, a negative perception that, you know, it's people's choices around being lazy or not wanting to work or decisions that have led down this path of, well, you're choosing to take drugs, you're choosing to live on the street. I've been doing this for nearly 5 years, and I can honestly say it, of the thousands upon thousands of individuals I've met, no one chooses to be homeless. No one chooses to live by the riverbank. It's unfortunate that we have so many members of our community that find themselves in that situation. But to get to that place, for a lot of individuals, it's a whole host of different reasons why they're there. It's not one specific issue. It is those compounding issues of mental health, addiction, and homelessness, where individuals that might not have gotten the supports that they need, the medications that they need, the counseling that they need, the housing that they need, the resources that they need, mm-hmm. that they've now self-medicated, or they are in such despair that they have no other choice, no other resources, no other, something as simple as hope. They don't even have that left. So that us that have so many things, you know, a fridge full of food, a warm bed, a roof over our heads. These are privileges, and a lot of people are in this situation, right? A couple of missed paychecks or, mm-hmm. you know, all of those types of things. I mean, never view an individual on the street as someone that's not human or lesser, right? I mean, we could all one day find ourselves in that position. And I think it's really important to remember that, and remember that as a community, we should be judged based on how we treat the least fortunate of our community, and to support and to raise those people up, I think is so critical.
I live in my bubble, and it's a very safe and secure bubble that in many ways I feel I've created over my years. So when I see someone on the street, here are my emotions, Dan. I think I'm nervous. I'm afraid of the unpredictable nature of the person. I go the opposite side of the street, and then I'm just glad it's over with. Yeah. What should I do with feeling that way?
It is okay to feel that way. It is okay to fear the unknown. And you opened up by stating, I live in a bubble. Chances are, and I live in a bubble as well, I think we all do in individuals who are middle class and above, we create these bubbles. And chances are, in your bubble, an individual who is homeless, who is yelling and screaming at the corner of Dundas and Wellington, chances are they don't live in your bubble. So it is okay to feel that way. But it's also okay to acknowledge that that individual is a human being, and something as simple as making eye contact, right? Acknowledging their existence is a step in the right direction.
Let me just pick up on something you just said, Dan. And that is, you said, just to acknowledge them by making eye contact. I have made eye contact. And that's like their soul looking into my soul. And I have to tell you, frequently their soul doesn't seem to like what they see, and it escalates. So help me with that.
When you put your guard up, they put their guard up. And it's this becomes a relationship of almost adversaries, and you don't even know one another.
Now, you are an openly gay man. Does that inform your job in any way?
I think being an individual, I'm very, very blessed, and I recognize how blessed I am that. Throughout my career, I've always worked with employers that have been incredibly accepting and inclusive, and I really have had a great opportunity in my career to be open and who I am, and to talk freely about, you know, the things that me and my husband do on a weekend, and having no issues. So I want to preface by saying that very fortunate. I have in my life experienced homophobia. I have in my life experienced discrimination, again, not in the workplace, but certainly outside. And yes, you know, I think in all careers, no matter your sexuality, no matter your title, no matter your sector, life experiences inform how you react in a work environment, right? Those life lessons that we learned outside of the work environment absolutely play a role in the decisions that we make in our work environment. And certainly having some of the experience I've had in my life just adds to the well of compassion that I can draw from when supporting individuals who may have also experienced discrimination, or other forms of harassment. So yes, I think it has, but I don't speak for all gay men. Unfortunately, even in 2020, there are men who are women, trans members of the transgender community, that are forced to remain in the closet because of fear and discrimination. So still a lot of progression made, but a lot of progression still that needs to be made.
Now, when did you decide to, as you say, come out of the closet?
I was my late teens when I decided to, I think I was in my first year of university. Again, living in a bubble, or being very blessed to come out to a very supportive family, supportive friends. Mm-hmm. Again, in my career, it has never been impactful in any way whatsoever. Yes. Never ever treated well differently than any of my counterparts. So it's been, I'm getting to one of the elder days, I think, now that I can count it by decades rather than years out of the closet. So my advice to individuals that might be watching this series and, you know, struggling perhaps with their own sexuality or in the context of how to navigate that in the work environment, my advice is always to reach out to your supports, right? To connect, to talk out loud about it, I find to be very helpful, rather than having those internal conversations. Mm-hmm. Do it in a safe way, of course, in a safe space. Mm-hmm. But certainly reaching out for support, reaching out to others that have also gone through that experience, I think is very helpful. And I certainly, in my time, I had a mentor who was older than I was that experienced the same things that I did in terms of that coming out process and how to do that. My mentor was in a leadership position as well. So certainly his guidance still to this day is very impactful in my career and the decisions that I make. But reach out, seek that support.
You know, I'm going to ask you, why does it matter what you are or what I am? I know that's a really big question, but We're just people doing our best, and it's But why does it matter, Dan?
Yeah, I think it matters. We want to see ourselves in society, in structures, in organizations, in government. I think it is really important that certainly from municipal, provincial, federal governments, that the governments represent and look like the people in which they represent.
Yes, absolutely.
I think it's important for the City of London, particularly for social services. The individuals that are providing supports and services, we are civil servants. We should reflect the society in which we are supporting. Exactly. And our society is made up of a rainbow of individuals, backgrounds, sexualities, religious beliefs. Mm-hmm. The mosaic of our community and our society should be reflective of the organizations and the societies.
But my other point is, why would I be homophobic? Why does the way you are and the way you live your life, why does that matter to me and how I live my life? As long as you're happy, as long as you're kind, why would anybody be homophobic? And I know that that is a very big question to ask, but from your perspective.
Sure. It's really, really, really hard to hate close and front up. It's really, really easy to hate and fear what we don't know and is far away.
Okay.
So when you reflect and you say, you know, I have no issues with your sexuality, it doesn't really impact me, I don't even think of it, that automatically tells me that you have gay people in your life, that you know. So that automatically tells me that you understand that we are no different than you. We are not to fear. When I hear homophobic comments or homophobic positions, I think that's just really a lack of understanding and ignorance. And I think if those individuals took the opportunity to sit down with a member of the trans community, mm-hmm. or a member of the LGBT community, I think those positions can easily change. And you know, I've certainly have seen it in my own eyes where, you know, I think they call it, you know, a rediscovery, or, you know, this kind of like they took one position and now they've changed it to another position. I just think, particularly over the last few years, maybe more than a few years, but I can remember as a kid and teenager turning on television and seeing a gay person, you would take note of it because it was different. Today, you can't turn on the television without seeing a member of the LGBT community.
Yeah.
And I think that's so critical is to diversify and to connect with other people so they can learn and understand what their perspective and positions are. At the end of the day, we're just all trying to pay our bills, you know, survive, particularly during a global pandemic. So I just think it's exposure for sure.
I think that's really interesting what you're saying. This series has two parts, your career, and the second part is about career resilience. And you and I chatted about that. And I think it's really important. I would like to talk with you about how you're resilient in terms of the kind of job you have. And I mean here, Dan, how you are personally resilient.
Well, I wanted to spend some time touching on boundaries and workplace boundaries. And I think why I wanted to touch base on that is in my career, again, working here for nearly 5 years, working in social services my entire career. I, you know, before the city, I worked for the March of Dimes, working in the employment sector, helping individuals with disabilities find meaningful employment. Before that, it was with Employment Ontario, helping individuals secure employment, a regional HIV/AIDS connection. So I've had an entire career focused on working with vulnerable populations.
Yes.
And for me, the people that I've met, the caseworkers, the social workers, the counselors, the individuals with the most compassion, the absolute most compassionate people I've ever met are individuals that were able to set the hardest, most clear boundaries with their clients. You know, when you go into an airplane and they go through the safety message And in the event of an emergency and the oxygen masks are deployed, the messaging is put on your mask first and then help somebody else. And I think I reflect that to boundaries in the work environment, right? They tell you that because the instinct is to help everybody else around you and worry about yourself last. But you've just run out of oxygen, you can't help anybody else. So if you were to expand that over a 30-year career, if you're constantly putting others first and not setting those boundaries, eventually you will run out of oxygen. So I think for me, setting very clear boundaries is critical for longevity of one's career, but also to ensure that we remain compassionate and understanding, mm-hmm. and we don't let that kind of that jadedness that could eventually take set and hold.
Can you give me an example, a specific example of where you set boundaries with someone?
So oftentimes, again, working with the populations that we support here at City Plaza and Ontario Works, we're working with individuals who are on a continuum of crisis, right? They go from one crisis to another crisis. And when they come into our space, oftentimes they're in an escalated stage. And, you know, we certainly have our support structures in place. But in the event that they need to speak to a manager, I'm often called to the front and try to support them. I can control my emotions. I can control what I say and how I feel. But I cannot control how another person may be feeling. I can be compassionate and understanding in that moment. Mm-hmm. But it is not my job to make them feel better. It is not my job to solve their problem. It is my job to ensure that they have the tools and resources necessary, that I play system navigator. I connect them to the supports and resources that they need. I try everything I can to support them. But when that moment comes to an end and they leave, that problem is not my problem, because right. I need to be able to focus on the next individual that comes in and the next individual and the next individual. So right. For me, that boundary is, I will give you this moment and I will try everything I possibly can to support you. But when my job is done, I use the word that we often don't like to use, which is no, right? No, this is what we can do. This is the plan of action, but now you must go do your part and I have done mine. So I think we just, when we say no or we set boundaries, it feels as though we are not doing a good job or we don't care or we're checked out. And the reality is, without those boundaries, without boundaries, you can never check in or check out, because you're constantly revolving around work and issues that might be at work. So for me, it's those boundaries are important.
You know, I often think of we can only do what is at our own arm's length to do. And I think that's a lot of what you're describing, and we can feel good about that and we can feel very proud about that. Dan, I really appreciate chatting with you today and for you taking the time to talk me through some of this stuff. It's been absolutely fascinating. I have so much admiration for what you do for a living and what our civil servants offer us. I think we're very blessed. Very blessed indeed. So thank you for chatting with me.
Thank you, Jan, for the opportunity. Very much appreciated it. Thank you.
To our listeners and our viewers, I hope that you enjoyed my conversation with Dan today. I think it was fascinating and that we learned a lot. And until we meet again, thank you very much.